The Christian in Complete Armor by William Grinnell. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. The words are coupled to the precedent that with that casual particle for, which either refers to the two foregoing verses, and then they are a further reason pressing the necessity of Christian fortitude in the 10th verse, and furniture in the 11th, or else to the last words of the 11th verse, where the apostle, having described the saint's grand enemy to be Satan, and described him in one of his attributes, his willy subtility, he in this further displays him in his proper colors, not to weaken the saints' hands, but waken their care, that seeing their enemy marching up in a full body, they might stand in better order to receive his charge. Where, by the way, we may observe the apostle's simplicity and plain dealing, he doth not undervalue the strength of the enemy and represent him inconsiderable as captains used to keep their soldiers together by slighting the power of their adversary. No, he tells them the worst at first. If Satan had been to set out his own power, he could have challenged no more than is here granted him. See here the difference between Christ dealing with his followers and Satan with his. Satan dares not let sinners know who that God is they fight against. This were enough to breed a mutiny in the devil's camp. Silly souls, they are drawn into the field by a false report of God and his ways, and are kept there together with lies and fairy tales. But Christ is not afraid to show his saints their enemy in all his power and principality, the weakness of God being stronger than the powers of hell. Chapter 1. He writ the Christian's life here to be a continued wrestling with sin and Satan, and the falsity of those who are true wrestlers, as also how the true wrestlers should manage their combat. The words contain a lively description of a bloody and lasting war between the Christian and his implacable enemy, in which we may observe, first, the Christian state in this life set out by this word wrestling. Secondly, the assailant that appears in arms against the Christian, who are described, first, negatively, not flesh and blood, or rather comparatively, not chiefly flesh and blood. Secondly, positively, but against principalities, powers, etc. Section 1. For the first, the wrestling, or conflicting state of a Christian in this life is rendered observable here by a threefold circumstance. First, the kind of combat which the Christian state is here set out by, which, though it be used sometimes for a wrestling of sport and recreation, yet here to set out the sharpness of the Christian's encounter. There are two things in wrestling that render it a sharper combat than others. First, wrestling is not properly fighting against a multitude, but when one enemy singles out another and enters the list with him, each exerting their whole force and strength against one another, as David and Goliath, when the whole army stood, as it were, in a ring to behold the bloody issue of that duel. Now, there is more fierce than to fight in an army, where, though the battle be sharp and long, the soldier is not always engaged, but falls off when he hath discharged and takes breath away a while. Yea, possibly may escape without hurt or stroke, because there the enemy's aim is not at this or that man, but at the whole heap. But in wrestling one cannot escape so. He, being the particular object of the enemy's fury, must needs be shaked and tried to purpose. Indeed, the word signifies such a strife as makes the body shake again. Satan hath not only a general malice against the army of saints, but a spite against thee, John, thee, Joan. He will single thee out for his enemy. We find Jacob, when alone, a man wrestled with, as God delights to have private communion with his single saints, so the devil to try it hand to hand with the Christian when he gets him alone. as we lose much comfort when we do not apply the promise and providence of God to our particular persons and conditions. God loves me, pardons me, takes care of me. The water at the town conduct does me no good if I want a pipe to empty it into my cistern. So it obstructs our care and watchfulness when we conceive of God's wrath and flurry as bent in general against the saints and not against me in particular. Oh, how careful would a soul be in duty if, as going to church or closet, he had such a serious meditation as this: now Satan is at my heels to hinder me in my work, if my God help me not. Secondly, it is a close combat. Armies fight at some distance, wrestlers grapple hand to hand. An arrow shot from afar may be seen and shunned, but when the enemy hath hold of one, there is no declining, but either he must resist manfully or fall shamefully at his enemy's feet. Satan comes close up and gets within the Christian, takes his hold of his very flesh and corrupt nature, and by this shakes him. Secondly, the universality of the combat. We wrestle, which comprehends all, on purpose, you may perceive. The apostle changes the pronoun ye in the former verse into we in this, that he may include himself as well as them, as if he had said, the quarrel is with every saint. Satan neither fears to assault the minister, nor despises to wrestle with the meanest saint in the congregation. Great and small, minister and people, all must wrestle. Not one part of Christ's army in the field, and the other at ease in their quarters, where no enemy comes. Here are enemies enough to engage all at once. Thirdly, the permanency or duration of this combat, and that lies in the tense. Not our wrestling was at first conversion, but now over, and we pass the pikes. Not we shall wrestle when sickness comes and death comes, but our wrestling is. The enemy is ever in sight of us, yea, in sight with us, and there is an evil of every day's temptation, which, like Paul's bonds, abides us whenever we become, so that these particulars summed up will amount to this point. Section 2, Doct. The Christian life is a continual wrestling. He is, as Jeremy has said of himself, born a man of strife, or what the prophet of Asa may be said to every Christian: from hence thou shalt have wars, from thy spiritual birth to thy natural death, from the hour when thou first didst set thy face to heaven, till thou set thy foot in heaven. Israel's march out of Egypt was, in gospel sense, our taking the field against sin and Satan. And when had they peace? Not till they lodged their colors in Canaan. No condition wherein the Christian is here below is quiet. It is prosperity or adversity. Is it? Here is work for both hands, to keep pride and security down in the one, faith and patience up in the other. No place which the Christian can call privileged ground. Lot and Sodom wrestled with the wicked inhabitants thereof, his righteous soul being vexed with their unclean conversation. And how far fares he at Zoar? Do not his own daughters bring a spark of Sodom's fire into his own bed, whereby he is inflamed with lust? Some have thought, if they were but in such a family, under such a ministry, out of such occasions, oh, then they should never be tempted as now they are. I confess, change of air is a great help to weak nature, and these, forenamed as vantage ground against Satan. But thinkest thou to fly from Satan's presence thus? No, though thou shouldest take the wings of the morning, he would fly after them. These may make him change his mode in tempting, but not lay down his design. So long as his old friend is alive within, he will be knocking at the door without. No duty can be performed without wrestling. The Christian needs his sword as much as his trowel. He wrestles with a body of flesh. This to the Christian in duty is as the beast to the traveler. He cannot go his journey without it, and much ado to go with it. If the flesh be kept high and lusty, then it is wanton and will not obey. If low, then it is weak, and soon tires. Thus the Christian rids but little ground, because he must go his weak body's pace. He wrestles with a body of sin as well as flesh. This mutters and murmurs when the soul is taking up any duty. Sometimes it keeps the Christian from duty, so that he cannot do what he would. As Paul said, I would have come once and again, but Satan hindered me. I would have prayed, may the Christian say, at such a time, and meditated on the word I heard, the mercies I received at another, but this enemy hindered. It is true, indeed, grace sways the scepter in such a soul, yet as schoolboys take their time when their master is abroad, do shut him out, and for a while, Lord, it is a misrule, though they are whipped for it afterwards. Thus the unregenerate part takes advantage when grace is not on its watch, to disturb its government and shut it out from duty. Though this last makes the soul more severe and mortifying, yet it costs some scuttle before it can recover its throne. And when it cannot shut from duty, yet then is the Christian woefully yoked with it in duty. It cannot do what it doth as it would. Many a letter in its copy doth this enemy spoil, while he jogs him with infinite thoughts. When the Christian is praying, then Satan and the flesh are pracking. He cries, and they louder to put him out or drown his cry. Thus we see the Christian is assailed on every side by his enemy. And how can it be other, when the seeds of war are laid deep in the natures of both, which can never be rooted up till the devil cease to be a devil, sin to be sin, and the saint to be a saint. Though wolves may snare at one another, yet soon are quiet again, because the quarrel is not in their nature. But the wolf and the lamb can never be made friends. Sin will lust against grace, and grace drawn upon sin whenever they meet. Section 3. Use 1. First, this may reprove such as wrestle. But against whom? Against God? Not against sin and Satan? These are bold men indeed, who dare try a fall with the Almighty. Yet such they are, and a woe pronounced against them. Isaiah 45, verse 9. Woe unto him that striveth with his Maker. It is easy to tell which of these will be worst. What can he do but break his shins that dashes them against a rock? A goodly battle there is like to be, when thorns contest with fire and stubble with flame. But where live those giants that dare enter the list with the great God? Where are their names, that we may know them and brand them for creatures above all other unworthy to live? Take heed, O thou who askest, that the wretched man whom thou seems so to defy, to be not found in thine own clothes itself? Judas was the traitor, though he would not answer to his name. But put it off with a master, is it I? And so mayest thou be the fighter against God. The heart is deceitful. Even holy David, for all his anger, was so hot against the rich man that took away the poor man's ewe lamb, that he bound it with an oath, the man shall not live who hath done it, yet proves at last to be himself the man, as the prophet told him, 2 Samuel chapter 12. Now there are two ways wherein men wrestle against God. First, when they wrestle against the Spirit. Secondly, when they wrestle against His providence. First, when they wrestle against the Spirit. We read of this Spirit striving with the creature. Genesis 6, verse 3. My spirit shall not always strive with man, where the striving is not in anger and wrath to destroy them, that God could do without any stir or scuffle, but a loving strife and contest with man. The old world was running with such a career headlong into their ruin, he sends his spirit to interpose, and by his counsels and reproofs to offer, as it were, to stop and reclaim them, as if one seeing another ready to offer violence on himself should strive to get the knife out of his hand with which he would do the mischief, or one that hath a purse of gold in his hand to give should follow another by all manner of entreaties, striving with him to accept and take it. such a kind of strife as this of the spirits with men. And they are the lust of men, those bloody instruments of death, with which sinners are mischieving themselves. But the Holy Spirit grieves by sweet counsels and entreaties to get out of our hands. They are Christ, His grace and eternal life. He strives to make us accept at the hands of God's mercy. For repulsing the Spirit, thus striving with them, sinners are justly counted fighters against God. Ye stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, do ye always resist the Holy Spirit? Acts 7, verse 51. Now there is a twofold striving of the Spirit, and so of our wrestling against Him. First, the Spirit strives in His messengers with sinners, they coming on His errand and not their own. He vouches the faithful counsels, reproofs, and exhortations, which they give as their own act. Noah, that preacher of righteousness, what he said to the old world is the preaching of the Spirit, 1 Peter 3:19. The pains that Moses, Aaron, and other servants of God took in instructing Israel is called the instruction of the Spirit, Nehemiah 9:20. So that when the word which God's ministers bring in His name is rejected, the faithful counsel they give are thrown at sinners' heels and made light of, then do they strive with the Spirit and wrestle against Christ as really, as if He visibly, in His own person, had been in the pulpit and preached a sermon to them. When God comes to reckon with sinners, it will prove so. Then God will rub up your memories and mind you of His striving with you and your unkind resisting Him. They, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear, shall know that they had a prophet among them. Ezekiel 2:5. Now men soon forget whom and what they hear. Ask them what was pressed upon their conscience in such a sermon, they have forgotten. What were the precious truths laid out in another? And they are lost. And well were it for them if their memories were no better in another world. It would case their torments more than a little. But then they shall know they had a prophet among them, and what a price they had with him in their hands, though it was in fools' keepings. They shall know what he was and what he said, though 1,000 years pass, as fresh as if it were done but last night. The more zealous and compassionate, the more painful and powerful he was in his place, the greater shall their sin be found to break with such violence offered to do them good. Surely God will have something for the sweat, yea, lives of his servants, which were worn out in striving with such rebellious ones. Maybe, yet, sinners, your firmament is clear, no cloud to be seen that pretends a storm, but know, as you used to say, when it does not rot in the clouds, you shall have it at last. Every threatening which your faithful ministers have denounced against you out of the word, God is bound to make good. He confirmeth the word of his servant and performeth the counsel of his messengers. Isaiah 44, verse 26. And that in judgment against sinners, confirming the threatenings as well as in mercy, performing the promises which they declare as the portion of their children. But it will be time enough to ask such on a sick bed or a dying hour, whether the words of the Lord delivered by their faithful preachers have not taken hold of them. Some have confessed with horror they have, as the Jews, Zechariah 1:6. Like as the Lord of hosts thought to do unto us, so hath he done with us. Secondly, the Spirit strives with men more immediately. When he takes his inward approaches to the consciences of men, debating in their own bosoms the case with them. One, while he shows them their sins in their bloody colors, and whither they will surely bring them, if not looked to timely, which he does so convincingly, that the creature smells something the very fire and brimstone about him, and is at present in a temporal hell. Another, while he falls a praying and treating with them, making gracious overtures to the sinner, if he will return at his reproof, presents the grace of the gospel, and opens a door of hope for its recovery. Yea, falls a wooing and beseeching of him to throw down his rebellious arms, and to come to Christ for life, whose heart is in a present disposition to receive and embrace the first motion the returning sinner makes for mercy. Now when the Spirit of God follows the sinner from place to place, and time to time, suggesting such motions and renewing his own suit, and the creatures still fling out of a spirit's hands, thus striving with him, as far from renouncing his lust or taking any liking to Christ as ever, this is to resist the Spirit to his face, and it carries so much malignity in it that even where it hath not been final, poor humble souls have been overset with the horror of it, that they could not for a long time be persuaded but that it was the unpardonable sin. Take heed, therefore, sinners, how you use the Spirit when he comes knocking at the door of your hearts. Open at his knock, and he will be your guest. He shall have his sweet company. Repulse him, and you will have not a promise he will knock again. And if once he leaves, striving with thee, unhappy man, thou art lost forever. Thou liest like a ship cast up against the waves upon some high rock, where the tide never comes to fetch it off. Thou mayest come to the word, converse with other ordinances, but in vain. It is the spirit of them which is both tide and wind, to set the soul afloat and carry it on, or else it is like a ship on dry ground, which stirs not. Secondly, we wrestle against God when we wrestle with his providence, and that in two ways. First, when we are discontented with his provincial displeasure of us, God's carving for us both not please us so, but that we are objecting against his dealings towards us, at least muttering something with the fool in our hearts, which God hears as lightly as man our words. God counts then we begin to quarrel with him when we do not acquiesce in and say amen to his providence, whatever it is. He calls it a contending with the Almighty, Job 6:1, yea, a reproving of God. And he is a bold man, sure that dare find fault with God, an article against heaven. God challengeth him, whoever he is that doeth this, to answer it at his peril. He that reproveth God, let him answer it. Verse 2 of the chapter aforementioned. It was high time for Job to have done when he hears what a sense God puts upon those unweary words, which dropped from him in the anguish of the spirit in his sufferings. Content with the Almighty, reprove God. Good man, how blank he is, and cries out, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand upon my mouth. Let God but pardon what is past, and he shall hear such language no more. O, sirs, take heed of this wrestling above all other. Contention is uncomfortable. With whomsoever it is, we fall out. Neighbors or friends, wife or husband, children or servants, but worst of all, with God. If God cannot please thee, by thy heart rises against him, what hopes are there of thy pleasing him, who will take nothing kindly from that man who is angry with him? And how can love to God be preserved in a discontented heart that is always muttering against him? Love cannot think any evil of God, nor endure to hear any speak evil of him. But it must take God's part, as Jonathan David's, when Saul spake basely of him, and when it cannot be heard, will, like him, arise and be gone. When afflicted, love can allow thee to groan, but not to grumble. If thou wilt ease thy encumbered spirit into God's bosom by prayer, and humbly wrestle with God on thy knees, love is for thee, and will help thee to the best arguments thou canst use to God. And if thou wilt vent thy distempered passions, and show a mutinous spirit against God, this stabs it to the heart. Secondly, we wrestle against providence when incorrigible under the various dispensations of God towards us. Providence has a voice if we have had an ear. Mercy should draw afflictions away. Now, when neither fair means nor foul do us good, but we are impotent under both, that is, to wrestle against God with both hands. Either of these have their peculiar aggravations. One is against love, and so disingenuous. The other is against the smart of his rod, and therein we slight his anger, and are cruel to ourselves in kicking against the pricks. Mercy should make us ashamed, wrath afraid to sin. He that is not ashamed has not the spirit of a man. He that is not afraid when smitten is worse than a beast who stands in awe of whip and spur. Sometimes mercy, especially those outward mercies, which have a pleasing relish to the carnal part in a Christian, hath proved a snare to the best of men, but then affliction uses to recover them. But when affliction makes men worse, and they harden themselves against God to sin more and more while the rod is on them, what is life to reclaim them? Few are made better by prosperity, whom afflictions make worse. He that will sin, though he goes in pain, will much more if that once be gone. But take heed of thus contending with God. There is nothing got by scoffing with God, but blows or worse. If he said he will afflict thee no more, it is even the worst he can say. It is as much as if he should say, he will be in thy debt till another world, and there pay thee altogether. But if he means thee mercy, thou shalt hear from him in some sharper affliction than ever. He hath wedges that can rive thee. Wert thou a more knotty piece than thou art? Art thou yet the treasures of wickedness and the scant measure that is abominable, saith God to Israel? Micah chapter 6, verse 9. What incorrigible, though the Lord's voice crieth into the city, bidding you hear the rod in him that hath appointed it. See what course God resolves on, verse 13. Therefore I will make thee sick in smiting thee. As if he had said, my other psychic I see was too weak. It did not work to turn your stomach, but I will prepare a portion that shall make you sick at heart. Ease 2. It reproves those who seem to wrestle against sin, but not according to the word of command that God, that Christ gives. There is a law in wrestling which must be observed. 2 Timothy 2:5. If a man also strive for masteries, yet he is not crowned, except he strive lawfully. He allures to the Roman games, to which there were judges appointed to see that no foul play were offered contrary to the law for wrestling, the prize being denied to such, though they did foil their adversary, which the apostle improves to make the Christian careful in his war, as being under a stricter law and discipline that requires not only valor to fight, but obedience to fight by order. And according to the word of command, now few do this that go for great wrestlers. First, some, while they wrestle against one sin, embrace another. And in this case, it is not the person wrestles against sin, but one sin wrestles with another. And it is no wonder to see thieves fall out when they come to divide the spoil. Lust are divers. Titus chapter 4, verse 3. And it is hard to please many masters, especially when their commands are so contrary. When pride bids lay hold on bravery, lavish out in entertainment, covetousness bids lay up, when malice bids revenge, carnal policy says, conceal thy wrath, though not forgiven, when lust sends to his sink of sin, hypocrisy pulls him back for shame of the world. Now is he God's champion that resists one sin at the command of another, or it may be worse? Secondly, some wrestle, but they are pressed into the field, not volunteers. Their slavish fear scares them at present from their lust, so that the combat is rather betwixt their conscience and will than them and their lust. Give me such a sin, saith will. No, saith conscience, it will scald and throws it away. A man may love the wine, though he is loath to have his lips burned. Hypocrites themselves are afraid to burn. In such combats, the will at last prevails, either by bribing the understanding to present the lust it desires, in a more pleasing dress, that conscience may not be scared with such hideous apparitions of wrath, or by pacifying conscience with some promise of repentancy for the future, or by forbearing some sin for the present, which it can best bear thereby to gain the reputation of something like a reformation. Or if all this will not do, then prompt by the fierce of its lust, the will proclaims open war against conscience, sinning in the face of it like some wild horse, impatient of the spur which pricks him and bridle that curbs him, gets the bit between his teeth and runs with full speed, till at last he casts himself of his rider, and then, where he sees fattest pleasure, no hedge or ditch can withhold him, till in the end you find him starving in some pound for his trespass. Thus many sin at such rate that conscience can no longer hold the reins, nor sit the saddle, but it thrown them down and laid for dead, and then the wretches range where their lusts can have the fullest meal, till at last they pay for their stolen pleasures most dearly, when conscience comes to itself, pursues them, and takes them more surely by the throat than ever, never to let them go, till it brings them before God's tribunal. Thirdly, others wrestle with sin, but they do not hate it, and therefore they are favorable to it, and seek not the life of sin as their deadly enemy. Those who wrestle unjust, and not in earnest, the wounds that give sin one day are healed by the next. Let man resolve never so strongly against sin, yet it will creep again into their favor, till this love of sin be quenched in the heart, and this fire will never die of itself. The love of God must quench the love of sin, as Jerome excellently, thus love extinguished. This heavenly fire will indeed put out that flame of hell, which he illustrates by Ahasuerus' carriage to Vashti, his queen, who in the first chapter makes a decree in all haste that she come no more before him. But when his passion is a little down, chapter 2, verse 1, he begins to relent towards her, which his counsel perceiving, presently seek out for a beautiful virgin, on whom the king might place his love, and take into his royal bed. Which done, we hear no more of Vashti. Then, and not till then, will the soul's decree stand against sin, when the soul hath taken Christ into his bosom. Section 4. Secondly, to the saints. Seeing your life is a continual wrestling here on earth, it is your wisdom to study how you may best manage the combat with your worst enemy, which, that you may do, take these few directions. First, look thou goest not into the field without thy second. My meaning is, engage God by prayer to stand at thy back. God is in a league offensive and defensive with thee, but he looks to be called, as if thou meanest to steal a victory before he should know it, that hast more valor than Moses, who would not stir without God. No, though he sent an angel for his lieutenant, thou art wiser than Jacob, who, to overcome Esau, now marching up, turns from him and falls upon God. He knew if he could wrestle with God, he might trust God to deal with his brother. Engage God, and the back door is shut. No enemy can come behind thee. Yea, thine enemy shall fall before thee. God turned the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness, saith David. Heaven saith amen to his prayer, and the wretch hangs himself. Secondly, be careful, be very careful, of giving thine enemy handhold. Wrestlers strive
to fasten upon some part or other, which gives them advantage more easily to throw their adversary, to prevent which they used, first, to lay aside their garments, secondly, to anoint their bodies. For the first, Christian, labor to put off the old man, which is most personal, that corruption which David calls his own iniquity. Psalms 18, verse 23. This is the skirt which Satan lays hold of. Observe what it is, and mortify it daily. Then Satan will retreat with shame when he sees the head of that enemy upon the wall, which should have betrayed thee into his hands. Secondly, the Roman wrestlers used to anoint their bodies. So do thou. Bathe thy soul with the frequent meditation of Christ's love. Satan will find little welcome where Christ's love dwells. Love will kindle love, and that will be as a wall of fire to keep off Satan. It will make thee disdain the offer of a sin, and, as oils, supple thy joints and make agile to offend thy enemy. Think how Christ wrestled in thy quarrel. Sin, hell, and wrath have all come full mouth upon thee, had not he coped with them in the way. And canst thou find in thy heart to requite thy love by betraying his glory into the hands of sin by cowardice or treachery? Say not thou lovest him, so long as thou canst lay those sins in thy bosom, which plucketh his heart out of his bosom. It were strange if a child should keep and delight to use no other knife but that wherewith his father was stabbed. Thirdly, improve the advantage thou gettest at any time wisely. Sometimes the Christian hath his enemy on the hip, yea, on the ground, can set his foot on the very neck of his pride, and throw away his unbelief as a thing absurd and unreasonable. Now, as a wise wrestler, fall with all thy weight upon thine enemy. Though a man think it foul play to strike when his adversary is down, yet do not thou so compliment with sin as to let it breathe or rise. Take heed thou art not charged of God, as once Ahab, for letting go this enemy now in thy hands, whom God hath appointed to destruction. Learn a little wisdom of the serpent's brew, who, when they had Christ under their foot, never thought they had been sure enough, no, not when dead, and therefore both seal and watch his grave. Thus do thou to hinder the resurrection of thy sin, seal it with it down with stronger purposes, solemn covenants, and watch it by a wakeful, circumspect walking. Use 3. This is ground of consolation to the weak Christian, who disputes against the truth of his grace, from the inward conflicts and fightings he hath with his lust, and is ready to say, like Gideon, in regard of outward enemies, if God be with me, why is all this befallen me? Why do I find such strugglings in me, provoking me to sin, pulling me back from that which is good? Why dost ask? The answer is soon given, because thou art a wrestler, not a conqueror. Thou mistakest the state of a Christian in this life when one is made a Christian. He is not presently called to triumph over his slain enemies, but carried into the field to meet and fight them. The state of grace is the commencing of a war against sin, not the ending of it. Rather than thou shalt not have an enemy to wrestle with, God himself will come in a disguise into the field and appear to be thine enemy. Thus, when Jacob was alone, a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day, and therefore set thy heart at rest, if this be thy scruple. Thy soul may rather take comfort in this, that thou art a wrestler. This struggling within thee, if upon the right ground and to the right end, doth evidence there are two nations within thee, two contrary natures, the one from earth, earthly, and the other from heaven, heavenly. Yea, for thy further comfort know, though thy corrupt nature be the elder, yet it will serve the younger. Use 4. Oh, how shall this make thee, O Christian, long to go gone home, where there is none of this stir and scuffle? It is strange that every hour seems not a day, and every day a year, till death sounds thy joyful retreat, and calls thee off the field, where the bullets fly so thick, and thou art fighting for thyself with thy deadly enemies to come to court, where not swords but palms are seen in the saints' hands, not drums but harps, not groans of bleeding soldiers and wounded consciences, but sweet and ravishing music is heard of triumphing victors, caroling the praises of God and the Lamb, through whom they have overcome. Well, Christian, while you are below, comfort yourselves with these things. There is a place of rest remains for the people of God. You do not beat the air, but wrestle for a heaven that is yonder above these clouds. You have your worst first, the best will follow. You wrestle but to win a crown, and when to wear it, yea, wear, never to lose it. which once on none shall take off and put you to the hazard of a battle more. Hence we overcome to fight again. The battle of one temptation may be over, but the war remains. What peace can we have as long as devils can come abroad out of their holes, or anything of sinful nature remains in ourselves unmortified, which will even fight upon its knees and strike with one arm while the other is cut off? But when death comes, the last stroke is struck. This good physician will perfectly cure thee of thy spiritual blindness and lameness, as the martyr told his fellow at the stake. Bloody honor will do their bodies. What is it, Christian, which takes away the joy of thy life, but the wrestlings and combats which this bosom enemy puts thee to? Is not this the pennial that, vexing and disturbing thy spirit, hath kept thee off with many a sweet meal thou mightest have had in communion with God and his saints? Or if thou hast come, hath made thee cover the altar of God with thy tears and groans? And will it not be a happy hand which cuts the knot and sets thee loose from thy deadness, hypocrisy, pride, and whatnot, wherewith thou wert yoked? It is life which is loss, and death which is gain, thy gain. Be but willing to endure the rending of the veil of thy flesh, and thou art where thou wouldest be, out of the reach of sin, at rest in the bosom of thy God. And why should a short evil of pain affright thee more than the deliverancy from a continual torment of sin's evil ravish thee? Some, you know, have chosen to be cut rather than to be ground daily with the stone, and yet maybe their pain comes again. And canst thou not quietly think of dying to be delivered from the torment of thy sins, never to return more? And yet that is not half that death doeth for thee. Peace is sweet after war, ease after pain. But what tongue can express what joy, what glory must fill the creature at the first sight of God and that blessed company? None but one that dwells there can tell. Did we know more of that blissful state, we ministers would find it as hard a work to persuade Christians to be willing to live here so long as now it is to persuade them to be willing to die so soon. End of Ephesians 6, verse 12, chapter 1.